Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joins us now on a Tuesday at noon, as he does every week. Appreciate you for joining us, Tim. But I will tell you what, Tim, your name has been very, very popular around these parts over the last couple of weeks. Everyone's been talking about your Matt Nagy to the Tennessee Titans take over the past couple of weeks. That has just been catching on like wildfire. So I hope you feel popular.
I don't know if I feel popular. I guess I hope I'm right. If I'm attached to it, again, very clear, not reporting it. Just feel like, when you look at what's happened with where coordinators have gone, who's interviewed places, and all of that, I feel like it's a match. I feel like probably the direction of the Titans, it makes sense, I guess I should say, of why they're looking that direction. And I also think just the environment and the setup in Kansas City, I think, would lead to that. Now, some things obviously could change. Eric Bieniemy, he gets a job somewhere else. Maybe Matt Nagy becomes that gets the title of offensive coordinator in Kansas City. I just, like, if we're sitting here trying to predict it, that would be my prediction as we sit here on February 7th.
And I think, as time passes, and each passing day, and we don't hear any Titans offensive coordinator news, we don't hear any Titans offensive coordinator news as we get closer to the Super Bowl, I think a lot of more people, myself included, are starting to get on the Matt Nagy to the Titans train as well, at least my opinion. But I think
not to cut you off, and I think part of that is, look how this process goes, right? So, look, the Chiefs are still playing. And so I think that, coaches that are going to get hired off of that coaching staff because of the process in the NFL, as much as, people don't want to admit that that's how this works, is that, they're in a situation where they're saying, like, all right, look, we can't officially hire somebody while they're still coaching in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's the nature of it. Maybe that rule kind of changes at some point. If it does, I think, it'll be, maybe better for the NFL, but that's just how it works.
Right. The timing would make sense, or at least the lack of news that we've heard, considering the timing, considering the Super Bowl, would make sense. But I think one thing that has been worrying some people with Matt Nagy's history is that he hasn't necessarily been successful away from Andy Reid. He was successful as the Chiefs OC under Andy Reid. He's been successful as the quarterback's coach under Andy Reid, but wasn't successful in Chicago on his own. What would you say to people who may have that reservation about Nagy?
Yeah, well, I think that's a legitimate concern, and I think it's one of the reasons why, like, if you hire a head coach or a coordinator, from a position coach, because, he did a nice job with Tom Brady, or he did a good job with Aaron Rodgers, or he did a good job with Patrick Mahomes, he did a nice job with Josh Allen, while it might end up working out, I think it's like that's the process that you're using to decide if somebody's a good coach or not, then I think that there's probably a 50-50 chance, that you end up getting it wrong. I mean, look, Ben McAdoo became the Giants head coach because of the amazing job he did as the offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Are you a good teacher at Harvard or are you a good teacher at a public school that the kids need to be taught? Like, I think that you can't hire somebody based on the fact that, like, hey, he had success coaching this player. Now, I do think that, like, take somebody like Josh McDaniels. Like, Josh McDaniels has not had success away from Tom Brady or Bill Belichick, but I think that there's also an element of, all right, well, we like the fact that he had been a part of the Belichick process and seeing how he coached people and he learned in that building. And you can like those things, and I think that those things can also fool you. But, I think those things are, I guess, good markers to say, all right, he's been in, meetings with how Andy Reid talks about quarterbacks. He's been in meetings with how Andy Reid talks about offense and how he wants to coach you. We like that part of it. Now, is he able to put his own personality and spin on that, and does he have the organizational skills to do that? I think that's really what you're hoping for when you hire a coach off of a tree that, is attractive to you.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. And Tim, in fairness to Matt Nagy's time in Chicago, if you look at him relative to a lot of his predecessors, he did pretty well. He made the playoffs 2 out of 4 years as a head coach. He only had one losing season, and he had the 1 year at 12-4 where if the guy just makes a very easy field goal and it didn't double doink, you know, they could have had, you know, people thought they might have a chance to go a long way. And that was with a quarterback with pretty decent limitations and Mitch Trubisky.
Willie, I think it's a great point. I actually don't look at Matt Nagy's time in Chicago as this absolute failure.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just a crash and burn at all. You
know? No, and I think that to your point on the quarterback situation, look, the quarterback probably played the best football of his career with Matt Nagy in Chicago. I mean, that was, you go back to that time, that was Trubisky's, that's been his best moments as a pro, is that stretch. And so, yeah, I think that's beyond, I guess what I would say is I wouldn't have these criticisms of Matt Nagy because, like, hey, look at how poorly things went in Chicago. That wouldn't be my concern. My concern would more be, look, my attention's on him because Kansas City, look at what they're doing offensively, and oh, by the way, like, this is, you know, this is because of Matt Nagy. I mean, I would make the argument, I think it's because of number 15. So, but, like, I'll give you another example. A guy that I would be like, you know who I would love to talk to? I'd love to talk to Mike Kafka because, you know, Mike Kafka, yes, he was, look, he's been around all these good coaches, either as a player or as a coach. He was in Kansas City. He also was, you know, had experience with people, you know, other places. He just was a part of what happened in terms of Daniel Jones' transformation. Like, let me talk to that guy because that his success isn't tied to one amazing quarterback.
Tim Hasselbeck with us. Tim, last year I can remember when all of the, you know, for lack of a better term, they used to call it in NASCAR all the time, the silly season. You just speculate on who's changing teams and all of that stuff. This is that time, of course, especially with quarterbacks. You kept saying throughout the last year, if you really look, it's going to be very hard for the Packers to move on from Aaron Rodgers, even if in a perfect world there were a better solution. I look at the contract he ended up signing, and it's even harder to find a way that everybody would feel good about a trade or anything else. So tell me what you think the tea leaves look like there.
Yeah, well, Willie, I think to that point, when I look back at it and think about the things I said, you know, a year ago, the hard part back then was, what's the compensation? If Stafford goes for what Stafford went for, you know, if that was the trade compensation, Aaron was too valuable. Like, up until, because, you know, Aaron had a bad year this year, but going into this year, I think he had thrown 136 touchdowns and 19 interceptions over the previous, I think, three seasons or something like that. Like, so it was just like, what kind of value do you assign to that? Like, I mean, are we talking 5 first-round picks? Like, it was just so absurd that that was always going to be a blocker because no one was ever going to agree on what the compensation would be. The only thing I think that maybe changes that now is Aaron's age, Aaron's, you know, acknowledgement of, you know, he's probably close to the end, and maybe the fact that, look, he may not play for 5 more years, right? So you may be getting Aaron Rodgers on, like, he may agree to play, like, look, I'll play for 1, maybe 2 more years. That really is, I think, the only thing that could, like, suppress his trade value. And then the other side of it, obviously, is, all right, well, what happens with Green Bay in terms of the money that they paid him, what that does to their salary cap? And so that, you know, the team that would be getting Aaron obviously would have to, you know, essentially take the sting out of that for the Green Bay Packers.
And so I see a lot of people that speculate on, hey, Aaron Rodgers might fit over here. Or wouldn't it be great if he ended up over here? But nobody that I've seen lays out all of the things you just put out there. The issues with the contract. What is the compensation? You know, are you willing to give up good compensation? But just making the numbers work and then trying to deal with getting rid of the quarterback you already have. There's just a lot of practical barriers there that make it very tough.
Which is why the Las Vegas Raiders are the team now where you're like, well, that That was interesting what just happened. You literally sat your starting quarterback for the last two games. Because you didn't want him to get hurt. Now all of a sudden, like to your point, that first hurdle of, hey, we got to get rid of the guy that we have. We got to get him off our books. But the Raiders, essentially, they already did that, right? Like they look like they are already setting the table for something like that to happen. So, yeah, I think that that's – so, again, I guess as it relates to, things here locally, like that hasn't happened here. And obviously it's not the same timeline as Las Vegas was dealing with. But, like, the talk of, like, hey, maybe Aaron Rodgers is in, going to be in Tennessee, or maybe, like the things that need to happen in order for Aaron Rodgers to end up as somebody else's quarterback, like, there are a few spots you can start to identify and say, yeah, that actually could happen at that football team, and Las Vegas would be one of those teams.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck will stick around with us coming up next when I get his thoughts on the Super Bowl. We'll get into that with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joining us now. Tim, it's like Christmas for football fans. It is Super Bowl week. Do you think we have the two best teams in the NFL playing this weekend?
I do think we do have the two best teams. I think the 49ers probably... would it make the argument that they have a pretty good football team too. But look, if you don't have a quarterback, then obviously, it's hard to say that you've got one of the best teams in the NFL. And I think when you look at the year Jalen Hurts had, you look at how good they are on the offense and defensive line in Philadelphia, you can easily make a case that they should be at the top. And then obviously the job that Andy Reid has done, the success that they've had in Kansas City, and then obviously having one of the best players, if not the best player in football, as their quarterback, I think we actually are set up to have what probably ends up being a pretty good game. And the reason I say that is, look, Philadelphia can dominate you, but even if Kansas City finds themselves down 20 points, I just think that they are creative enough, they're talented enough offensively to be able to make a run and come back. And so I don't think the game will ever end up getting sideways.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. And I know we were talking a little bit before the break about Aaron Rodgers. And there have been two NFL execs in Mike Sando's Pick Six who said, Aaron Rodgers at the Titans would make sense. We heard Boomer Esiason go on radio in Chicago and say, yeah, I think Brady to the Titans would make perfect sense. I think the three most likely teams are the Jets, Tennessee, and the Raiders. Just looking at the fact that the Packers don't want to trade him to an NFC team, looking at quarterback needy teams that are looking at quarterbacks in this year's draft, looking at those three teams specifically, the Jets, the Titans, and the Raiders, where is Aaron Rodgers most likely to win a Super Bowl in the remainder of his career, in your opinion?
I think the Jets would be potentially the most likely, and I say that just based on how the roster's built, how talented they are on defense, the young talent that they have on offense, the fact that they could, potentially add to it, the ammunition that they would maybe have to get other players. I get that other people, and listen, other people that, presumably, know what they're talking about and maybe have some intel to connect a team like Tennessee to Aaron Rodgers. I just think Aaron's going to have a lot of control in it. And look, Aaron's issue and gripe in, things that he's kind of struggled with in Green Bay has basically been, hey, there isn't enough firepower here to help me, right? I mean, that essentially is the issue, much like it was, Tom Brady's concern, at the end in New England was like, hey, like, where are the good players around me? And look, I just don't think that Aaron Rodgers, who's going to have so much control in him moving, if in fact he changes teams, I don't think he's looking at the Tennessee Titans and saying, yep, like that roster, I can come in and I'm the missing piece to that roster. It doesn't feel that way. Where I think that when you look at the Raiders, the depth and talent that they have there, obviously they would have to resign some of their players that play there this year. Or you look at a team like the Jets, a good young running back, talented young wide receivers, a defense that's really good, and they've, you know, invested on that side of the ball in a heavy way. You know, the only issues that you would have in New York would be, you know, the health of some of the offensive linemen they've drafted and tried to develop.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, you're a broadcaster. You've also been specifically a color analyst. You kind of know what it's like transitioning from playing the game to, you know, the nuances of doing a good job in that chair. I'm really interested to see what happens with Tom Brady as an announcer. And I was surprised yesterday that he's taken a full year before he hops in there. I felt like there was time over the summer to work on these kind of things, but I guess Fox will have to wait.
Yeah, and there's part of it for me, too. I mean, just look at what the Mannings have done. You know, like to be commenting on football doesn't mean that it has to look the traditional way of, you know, being in a booth and being Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. I mean, I think that, you know, Peyton and Eli have obviously created an environment where that's not the case. And I think that, like, I think for Brady, and listen, maybe I'm not educated enough on, you know, kind of what he's agreed or what Fox has specifically announced that he's going to do, but, you know, I think almost anything that Tom Brady is going to do, people are going to have interest in it. People are going to want to watch it. And it may not be traditional broadcast with, you know, Tom Brady in the booth as the color analyst, especially if you have somebody that's doing a good job in that spot right now, which most people think that Greg Olsen is doing.
Well, that was going to be where I was going, because I do think with the old adage is, if it's a great game, you're not going to not watch the game because maybe you're not thrilled with the announcer. There's not a superstar Hall of Famer calling the game. That's where I think Greg Olsen deserves a lot of credit. You know, he was a very good player for a long time, but I think he's an excellent analyst, and people probably didn't realize how good he was until this year.
Well, and I think, I mean, let's just, I mean, call it what it is. Like, Greg Olsen has become what, you know, people wanted Jason Witten to be. You know, the thing about the tight end position is, you know, you learn a lot about the passing game. You learn a lot about the run game just because of the nature of the position that you play. So you're really educated about just the sport and offensive football. You probably have special teams experience. And so, you know, while quarterbacks and coaches have been hired to, you know, have a lot of these, you know, kind of premier spots and roles on TV commenting on the game, you know, there is an element of the tight end position, you know, being one that kind of sets you up to have, you know, a unique knowledge about the game and certain, you know, different aspects of the game. And so I think that's why some people, I mean, look, Mike Mularkey was a, you know, coach here, Ken Wisenhunt, you know, or, you know, guys that played that position, you know, there is kind of a unique perspective on the game because you've had your hand in the dirt, you know, at the same time you've attacked coverages. And, you know, and you've maybe covered a kick or been on kickoff return. And so I think that Greg has done a nice job of, when he's commented on the games, you kind of get a sense of all that he's learned from his time as being a player. And he was a great player.
Wow, I never thought of that. It's like the catcher, right? The catcher in baseball always tends to be a good manager, sometimes a great, color commentator. The tight end is the catcher. I didn't realize that. But I think you've made a connection here, Tim. I think you're right.
Well, listen, I had an offensive lineman tell me one time, I was working with him, and he was like, you know, asking me questions about the passing game, and he's like, I never paid attention when they were talking about that stuff when I was a player. I never paid attention. And then there was a fullback who was working at the company at the time, and he's like, listen, all I did was stare at the back of the offensive line's butts in my entire career. Like, I was definitely not paying attention to that stuff. And so, you know, there is an element of, look, when a guy is playing, you know, what is he paying attention to? Is he paying attention to just his
What
job
do you have to understand?
Picture? Yeah, and I think, to your point, catchers obviously have to understand more about that, and I think that tight ends as well.
That is funny. So I guess that says a lot for Moose Johnson. He was paying attention to other things besides just the back of that big offensive line in Dallas.
Correct.
All right, Tim, before we let you go, give us the matchup that you're most intrigued with here. You know, pick either side of the ball. You know, the matchup, Eagles offense versus Chiefs defense or vice versa.
Yeah, I'll throw two things to you. One of the things that Philadelphia does in critical down and distances is they essentially run today's version of triple option. And when I say triple option, I mean like Naval Academy, Army, like that type of triple option. It is dive, keep, pitch. I mean, that is what Philadelphia will do. So as you're watching the game, you get a gotta-have-it situation, a third and two, a fourth and one, things like that. Philadelphia will read it. Now, it doesn't look like traditional option. Like, it looks like zone read with a player running into the flat. I mean, that's what it'll look like. And they'll do it with tight ends. They'll do it with wide receivers. And so that's something they do a great job of. Philadelphia has to have an answer for that type of thing, or else they won't be able to get off the field. And then I think the other aspect of it for Kansas City, I think we all think that, there'll probably be some limitations still to Mahomes with his ankle. And I think the challenge ends up being Philadelphia is really good at rushing the passer. And, you know, Mahomes not being able to escape means that for the most part, you're going to know where he is. So you're going to know where to rush, because I don't think that, Kansas City wants to really get in and move him around. And because of that, like if Philadelphia is getting home, it could be a little bit like, you know, the Super Bowl we saw before, where they just weren't able to protect Mahomes. And no matter how talented he is, if he's on his back, it's hard to win the football game.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Last one for you quickly, Tim. This is the Chiefs' third Super Bowl in the last 4 years. Is this the next Brady Belichick dynasty with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid in Kansas City?
You know, I don't think to the same extent, obviously, just based on age of, you know, probably age and experience of Andy Reid at this point. I don't know how much longer. Yeah, I mean, he's going to coach for a while longer, but I don't, you know, I don't know the run that Andy will go on. But I would just say this, like I've been coming on long enough and been on with Willie long enough to know that, like, the way I feel about Andy Reid, I think he's the best. And, you know, he hasn't had the same success that Bill Belichick has had, but I think he's as good of a coach. That's how I feel about Andy Reid. And so to answer your question, yeah, I do think this is a dynasty. This is a team that, like, everything is going to have to – like, if you want to be the best, you're going to have to deal with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes for sure.
Ooh, not encouraging to hear in an AFC town here. Tim, we appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, see you guys. Enjoy the game.
All right, thanks, Tim. And I think Tim brought up a few good points about the future of a certain quarterback and what that means for the rest of the football world. We'll get into that, and, of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. It's Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.